www.twiliving.com.
You know that health is wealth, and ITAL is vital. They're not just some rhyming words, it's something that's just got to be heard. Who is responsible for your health? Look in the mirror, it's your very own self. You can't rely on nobody else. Health is wealth, ITAL is vital. Try and take care of yourself. Health is wealth, ITAL is vital. You can't rely on nobody else. Health is wealth, ITAL is vital. Try and take care of yourself. Health is wealth, ITAL is vital. You can't rely on.
And good afternoon, and welcome to another edition of To Your Health. To Your Health is a program designed not only to inform, but to turn your life and health around. I'm your host, Dr. Theodore Watkins, and I'm here with my trusty assistant and producer, Mr. Frank Smith. How are you doing, Brother Frank?
I'm doing well, Doc.
All right.
Thank you for asking.
All right. We're really privileged today to have my friend and mentor in many areas, Dr. Amir Snyder. Brother Frank.
Yes, sir. Dr. Amir Snyder was born blind in 1954 due to a congenital cataracts and was permanently certified legally blind. Despite his condition, he never gave up on his dream of gaining sight and began practicing eye exercises using the Bates method at the age of 17. Through his diligent practice, he was able to recognize visual objects for the first time in his life within 6 months and read print without glasses within 18 months. Today, Mir holds an unrestricted California driver's license, and his vision continues to improve. Mir developed his own method of self-healing through body work and movement, which has helped tens of thousands of people worldwide with serious physical and visual conditions. He is an internationally respected therapist, educator, and author, and the founder of director of the School for Self-Healing in San Francisco. In addition, he is a renowned author of like subjects. Mir has received numerous awards and honors for his work, including a PhD in the healing arts and recognition as one of the top 10 most inspirational Israelis. He continues to travel the world, teaching and sharing his unique approach to holistic health and self-healing. Dr. Mir?
Hi. I just want to tell everyone that if you want to improve your vision and see better, if you want to get rid of the tendency to have high eye pressure, if you want to reduce the cataract coming, well, on the 12th of February, we're going to have a class from the 12th to the 17th, our annual, just once a year, a six-day eye class. And this is a wonderful class where basically more than 90% of the people end up seeing better. And at least half of them continue the practice and end up being able to drive without glasses, walk without glasses, read without glasses. So the six-day eye class is very useful, very successful. And I hope to see as many of you as I can, as I've done before. One of my good friends, Marsha, came to San Francisco and ended up not needing a procedure of laser in her eyes as a result of it. And it was already a confirmed procedure for glaucoma. So if you have the time And if you don't want to stay in the winter, by the way, I'm now in the winter of Quebec. DC is warm comparing to Quebec, and it's not warm at all. What is very nice to be in the icy thing here with, for 2 degrees, 1 degree, 0 degree Fahrenheit. When I'm coming back to San Francisco, it's going to be 67 degrees.
Yes.
So if you want to come on February to a place that is not Florida, it's not Hawaii, but is in the 60s, please don't hesitate to come to our wonderful place by the beach. We use the beach, the waves, and also we can put eye charts on the sand with an easel. We use the beach for exercises. Couldn't be more fun than that while everybody in your family is freezing. So at least you'll have 6 days of having fun with me, with all of my humor, with my teaching, and with your eyes. People start to have lifetime friendship after they see others that also work in their eyes, improve their eyes. And because this is really not your conventional way of working, they end up being friends of those who do exactly the same thing and have all the mental and emotional opening after improving the eye so much.
Thank you very much. So, Mir, I'm so good to see you here, and I'm glad that you're comfortable in that cold weather. I'm from Cleveland, but I can't stand the cold, so... But look here, question. I understand that you think that the brain is actually more significant than the eyes when it comes to vision. Can you explain that?
Oh, it's so interesting. There's very few cases like this. 1 in 1.5 million infants. But 2 infants were born with their head together. And so each one of them had her own brain, but the brain connected to each other. Normally they die within a year and a half. Those did not die, and they ended up going to school. When one of them saw the world, saw a picture, and the other one closed her eyes, she still saw what the other one was seeing, which means you actually see with your brain. Basically, 90% of the information that comes to you through your eyes is being blocked in the beginning in an area called thalamus. That is the relay center. And only a small percentage gets to the occipital lobe, which is seeing, because vision is not only sensation, it's also perception. And the perception is in the brain, and the concept of what you see makes a huge difference of how you see it. Quite often, we're surprised by something which is in front of our eyes because we had the concept that it's different than what it is. You think, well, what changed in the face of the person? I've met him daily, but now he looks different. What's going on? And only 10 minutes later, you discover, he shaved the beard that he had for 10 years. Or you put a hat on someone's head when actually he doesn't have that hat until you realize he actually doesn't have the hat. So what I want to say is that we, first of all, sense. That's the retina. That's our eyes. And all the eye is built around sensation. But then there is perception and concept, and that is in the brain. And that's why the eye will change if the brain only let it change. And what happens to many of us is that while things are not in favor for our eyes, they're even much worse for our brain. And in many ways, the structure of the eye and disease of the eyes come from poor concepts in the brain.
So does that mean that once a person's brain is formed, and it's that way forever, or is it possible to actually change how the brain functions and therefore affect the vision?
You know, Dr. Watkins, when you were in school, and later on when I was in school, we both learned that brain cells die and never recover. That's what we learned.
Yeah,
but in the last 20 years or so, they're teaching us that there are neurotrophic factors, that they actually build brain cells. And furthermore, they teach us that brain cells don't die, the synapses disappear. And each synapse can grow, listen to this, by 10,000 folds. Each synapse.
10,000 folds. 10,000 times.
Exactly. 10,000 times, right. So what happens in the brain can change completely. It's only a question of exercise it correctly. And I want to say something very important. The eye exercises is a part of the exercises for the whole nervous system. And many people go to gyms to build up muscles, and it's good. I, for example, before being on in a discussion with you on this show, I took a nice walk in the snow. You know how it is. You have to wear like several layers on yourself and long johns, thermal underwear and everything to be able to sustain this weather. But nevertheless, it was such a relief to walk outside of a structure. And many people find themselves in shopping malls all the time because they don't want to be outdoors in this weather. Unlike San Francisco, they're out a lot. But the point is, it's so important to have oxygen. It's so important to have variety. But the most important thing is, you may want to build more muscles. You may want to walk more, like I did. But you also want to build new activities in your nervous system. Example, let's talk about digestion. You teach people a lot of what food to eat. I teach people a lot about peristalsis, the movement of the digestive system.
Okay.
Now, you know that your digestive system has as many neurons as or nerve cells as your spinal cord does, right. 100 million.
That's right.
And it's independent system in many ways, like you have the mural plexus in the stomach. That's perfect. The stomach can enlarge. You know, if you choose to be fat, you just eat more and more, and the stomach will enlarge and store more food. It's not going to digest it any better, but it's going to store more. So the point is, the stomach, the intestine, they all are independent in their own nervous system. But if the amygdala in your brain, which affects emotion, decides to restrict the work of the abdominal, of the digestive system, it will work at 20% capacity. By the way, it works the opposite way too, in that the digestive system can affect very well how you feel and how you think. If you have liver problems, believe me, depression comes right after that. If you have butterflies in your stomach, believe me, that's going to affect the sense of anxiety in your brain. Those things are reciprocal. But the important thing that I want to say is that working on increasing the nervous system capacity is more important than just working on the muscles. And again, I work on the muscles every day. In San Francisco, when the weather is more welcoming, you're going to see me taking a walk of 54 blocks practically every day. And that's good. I'm, 71. I always say I'm 17, just they figured the numbers they put opposite of where they should be, right? But anyway, these days I do more walking than running, but because of the running I've done for so many years, the walking is easy for me, and I have energy, and I can do it for many, many blocks every single day. It's fantastic. But at the same time, what makes one move better or worse, what keeps you in balance, what prevents you from illness, what creates harmony in your function is your nervous system, both the somatic, which is the body nervous system, and the autonomic, which is the active nervous system, the digestive nervous system, the fight and flight nervous system, and the relaxing nervous system. Those nervous systems affect you more than anything else, and activating them is important. Returning to the eyes, a huge portion of your oxygen goes to your retina. A huge portion of your blood flow goes to the occipital lobe of the brain. You ought to work them better and not just confine yourself in glasses, not just confine yourself in aggressive medical treatment, but work on your brain and on your eyes and the connection between the brain and the eyes, and your eyes will be much better for the first 100 years of your life.
So, by extension, by working and exercising the brain, can you also improve the cognitive function of an individual?
Absolutely, absolutely. And here is something very important. We have to work on balancing exercises. We also have to work on movement. You told me something that really helped me in my previous trip to Israel, when I worked on a lady that is not in the present, doesn't remember that her son is in front of her, but she becomes much more in the present when she walks. And I taught her to walk and walk and walk, and then we massaged her, and she was in a much, much better space. Mm-hmm. And basically, without that, she's a zombie, basically. She nothing moves. She doesn't remember. Can you imagine not remembering who your son is or who your daughter is, who your grandkids are, knowing something about them, but not really remembering them? That was, for me, a huge experience. And you enlightened me, because what you talked to me, and by the way, I've written an article in Authority magazine on walking. And I brought in what you told me in one of the shows, that when elderly people walk for a long period of time, often the memory comes back. And I really believe that's the case. So circulation is important. But special exercises on the nervous system to calm the nervous system down, to create coordination, to activate areas of the body we normally don't activate. After all, we have more than 600 muscles in the body, and most of us use only 50 out of them. And that's why so many people have back pain. That's why so many people have joint problems. That's why so many people have eye problems. If you ask me, what's the origin of many eye problems? I will tell you. It's, first of all, neck tension. If your neck is tight, not enough blood comes to your eyes. But the second thing, and here I want to say that I'm very happy that some people consult with you, get some nutritional suggestion, because that helps them to feel fresh and refreshed. But then there's another thing that is very important, and that is lack of activity of many of our cells in the retina, and many of our cells in the eyes. And therefore, when I wrote my book, Vision for Life, I talked about all the principles of natural vision improvement.
Very good. Excellent. Excellent. So, you know, one of the concerns, you know, I'm an old man now. My wife hates for me to say that, but, you know, when I was young, 81 was old. I don't feel old, but
well, neither as a man. You're 18?
Yeah, 18, man, 18. Look here, I feel like I'm 18, to be honest. But you know, as we get older, cataracts is something that is a problem. You know, matter of fact, the doctor even told me I was starting to develop some cataracts. What can we do to prevent, stop, and even reverse, or can we reverse cataracts?
Absolutely. So let's talk about it. Thank God you lived better life than many other people. And only in your 70s, there was a beginning of that cataract. But you know, so many people these days get cataract in their 40s and 50s. And I predict that unless we will be able to bring the message out there, many people in the modern world will get cataracts in their 20s and 30s. And a few things which are responsible for it. First of all, the fact that we look from near so much, that we need to read many books. And now it's even worse. We have the radiation of TV, of computer. Look what we're doing. We have this discussion on Zoom, and we see each other in the computer, and that means we're close to to the computer we're looking at. So that's one terrible thing. The other thing is people don't blink enough. Do you know that? I mean, most people who look at computers basically blink 7 times a minute instead of 22 times a minute. It's really hard on the eyes if we don't blink. So about 50% of people have dry eyes. And Dr. Watkins, when you were a child, 20% of Americans had eye problems. Now 70%. Okay? And that's not an unusual statistic. It's even worse in some other places. In South Korea, 94% of people have eye problems. So it's depends how early you give that phone with video games to your child. Because the earlier he does it, or she does it, and the earlier they look at the phone and play with it, the more they weaken the eye. One thing which many people do that I would like to prohibit them from doing, and again, I'm sorry, your show is not only national, but not international, because I want to tell it everywhere. Don't rub your eyes. Don't scratch your eyes. It's a beginning of corneal problems, and it weakens the eyes. And be aware of the fact that anytime you do any procedure to the eyes, and sometimes I myself tell people, go and do a cataract surgery. You can't see your fingers in front of you. By all means, do it. But the point is that quite often what happens is that we don't look enough at a distance. And one nice story to tell you is that one woman brought her 15-year-old to a doctor in Israel, and she brought her to fit glasses because she wouldn't see the board well at school. He asked the mom, how long does she play outdoors? And the mom says she doesn't play outdoors. She's all the day in front of the computer and her phone. He said she should play outdoors every day for 3 hours. 2 months later, they came and there was no need for glasses.
Oh, well, that, come on.
That was a very open-minded ophthalmologist. Most ophthalmologists don't think that way. They just give you glasses. But I must say, more so optometrists. They give you glasses very quickly. So the point is that being outdoors is something we don't do enough of. Now that I look at you, both of you look wonderful. I also, from time to time, am looking at the snow and at the trees, which are more at a distance, to rest my eyes. Every day, I go with my partner somewhere where we can see nature and relax the eyes. People don't do enough of that. So these days, eyes get worse. And that's why I came with my principles of natural vision improvement. First of all, total relaxation of the eyes. And it doesn't really matter if it's hard for you to see it. Then adaptation to the sunlight. Many times people wear sunglasses which simply widen their pupils. And then they don't adapt to the sunlight and they have a problem with the eyes. Also, adaptation to the greatest darkness. In my 6-day class, we walk one day in the park, one lady said to me kiddingly, she said to me, the brightest morning I ever had was one long night walk with Mayer in the park. adaptation to the periphery, adaptation to the dark. There was one person who had red eyes from overuse of his computer, and a walk at night really took that redness away. For a while at least. We need to expand our periphery. We need to learn to create balance use between the eyes. And we need to have much more blood flow to the head. So those principles are so important. I've explained them in my book, Vision for Life. They're so, so important for us to remember. Adapt, don't escape. Adapt, don't escape. That's why you go to somebody like Dr. Watkins and you try to adapt to modern life with a good diet. So you don't have to deal with all kinds of problems that happen to you and you don't try to take medication. Do you know, Dr. Watkins, that George Bernard Shaw lived long life in his age, in his time, in the 50s, most men died at the age of 62. Mm-hmm. He died at the age of 96. So a reporter came and asked him, how come you live so long? And he took him upstairs and he shown him an attic with a lot of shelves full of medication, said, those are all the medications given to me that I never took.
All right. You know, it's interesting. I find myself blinking a lot after, you know, talking to you and reading your book, and also looking at the distance. When I drive, I often, you know, I don't want to run in the back of someone, but I'll look at the distance, you know, because I think it's just so important. Yeah. And it really makes a difference when you do those things. Now, in addition to cataracts being a major problem, you know, glaucoma, you mentioned it earlier. You know, we lose the peripheral vision and so forth, and the pressure increases in the eyes. You know, what is glaucoma, number one, and what can we do about, or can we do anything about it?
Well, you know, definitely we can do a lot about it, but let's start with the question of what is glaucoma. And if you ask me, now that's not the medical viewpoint, glaucoma is a death of the optic nerve. Basically, it dies. And of course, pressure affects it. And of course, lack of balance use of the eyes affects this. Lack of balance use within each eye affects this. But number one, what affected is stiff neck. People think nothing of stiff neck. It's just a small thing. There are more than 200,000 massage therapists in this country alone. You find them in supermarkets, in airports, everywhere you go. And we all need a little bit of massage, but truth is to the matter is that because of gravitational forces, we tend to shrink the neck. Two things that cause it the most is sitting on a chair for many, many hours and with shoes on cement. So if you learn to mobilize your toes, if you learn to relax your body, and one of the first exercises I've done with people who came to my vision class is getting them to walk backwards and forwards to start and loosen up the neck, because they always try to see everything, but to feel the whole body as they walk backwards. Well, that makes a huge difference. So if your neck is loose, and we've shown a lot of exercise of moving the middle back while sitting cross-legged, loosening the neck, massaging the forehead on the floor, massaging the head, the crown of the head on the floor. You then are loosening up your neck and the optic nerve gets more flow, blood flow. But also the eyes consume so much oxygen and blood. So you need to balance the use between them. Otherwise, it's very tough. I would like to ask from every audience, if you can, and even from both of you, if you can, to stand up just on one leg for 15 seconds. Just stand up on one leg. Breathe deeply and slowly. And I can tell you, relax, feel good. But look how much more you're relaxed when you put the other leg on the ground. And then lift the other leg. And I can tell you again, feel good, relax, enjoy yourself. And look how much more relaxed you are when you put the other leg on the ground. So if you use one eye much more than the other, you create completely increase tension in the eye that you use, and you weaken the eye that you don't use. But also within the eye, the areas that you use more than others. And therefore, we are very sensitive to that, and we're working with that. I used to work on many people, and I still do, who have vision only in one eye. And I've learned how to create balance there. But all of us need to create balance within each eye and between the eyes. And that doesn't exist enough. We don't have enough sense of periphery. We don't have enough activity within each eye. And that's what eye exercises can do. I want to return to the fact that we have many neurotrophic factors in our body that can rebuild brain cells and give us new orders. That's why I do my seminars at length, because I want people to exercise and exercise. Because see, neurons eventually, synapses eventually die out. And neurons don't fire as much if we don't repeat what we're doing.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. That's really amazing. So many people, I'm sure come to you with glasses, you know, like they come to me on medicines, and I tell them, you know, I don't snatch them off medicines. I try to get them so that they don't need the medicine. So do you do the same thing with reducing the eye prescription, you know, so that their glasses are weaker and they're using their eyes more?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I send them to a very friendly optometrist who gives them 80% correction. So if 100%, 80%. And statistically, I found that within 2 months, they see 100% with their lower correction. But I will tell you more than that. I remember a lady who already did eye exercise before she came to my training course, advanced training course that I do. She worked in my course, and then she went and studied more things, and she was a teacher of eye exercises. And she had 18 diopters. You hear that? 18 diopters of farsightedness. She was hyperopic. And she put one pair of glasses on her dashboard and one pair of glasses near her computer. It was in the 80s. We didn't have those smartphones yet. 3 years later, she did not need the pair of glasses in her dashboard. 5 years later, she did not need the pair of glasses near her computer, and her prescription dropped from 18 to 2.
Oh, wow.
And I'm having, you know, if you look at Amazon and look at my book, Vision for Life, 70% of the people say that their dependency on glasses dropped as a result of using my book. Just think what happens when they come to me for practice.
So why is underprescription better than overprescription?
Because what happens is glasses weaken your eyes no matter what. It's very interesting. You go to the optometrist, he fits you glasses, you wear them, and you feel uncomfortable with them. So what does he tell you? Get used to them. How do you get used to them? You weaken your eyes. If you give you a reduced prescription, you can still see things. It looks a bit fuzzier. But in the meantime, you do eye exercises. Slowly but surely, you get used to the prescription. And then you see 20/20 with that prescription. You see better and better. That particular woman I was talking about, she did several prescriptions because the vision was so poor that she used a prescription to be at home, a prescription to walk outdoors, and her normal prescription. And slowly, slowly, the one outdoors became a regular prescription, and then the one at home became a regular prescription, and she saw better and better. So let me ask you this question, Dr. Watkins. If somebody had weak legs, yes, wouldn't you intuitively feel the need to tell them, do some exercise, go to the pool?
Definitely.
Get massage, get better. Or would you immediately give them a cane or crutches? But what happened these days, nobody gives you the option of seeing better. You go to the school nurse and she immediately gives you glasses. That is ridiculous. That is not acceptable. And the result is what I was saying. 70% of the people in the United States, and the United States is not the worst country for it. 70% of people, instead of 20% of people many years ago, are these days with vision problems. So again, don't look as much as you look these days at the screen. Don't rub your eyes. Blink with them gently and nicely. Look at the distance. Do the eye exercise of looking at details. make your eyes as alive as possible and teach your brain new habits. You will end up then having good vision for 100 years or more.
This is Dr. Theodore Watkins. The program is To Your Health. We're here with my buddy, mentor, trainer, Dr. Amir Snyder, and we're talking about eyes. And if you have a question or comment, give us a call. The number is 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. So now we talked about those brain cells. You know, what can we do to build more brain cells, you know, these neurotransmitters, you know, and neurotropics?
The neurotrophic, the neurotransmitters are helpful. And the way to balance the work of the neurotransmitters is to find a way to relax. For example, a wonderful meditation is the palming meditation that I teach, where you rub your hands and you put your hands around the eye orbits and you visualize that you're seeing nothing, maybe black, like you would sit in a cave and you would see blackness.
That so when you rub your hands together and you put it, do you open your eyes or close your eyes?
Close them.
Okay.
Close them gently, as if you're about to go to sleep. So you close your eyes, you have your elbows lean on something comfortable, and you focus on your breathing, and you focus on seeing nothing. Perhaps sometimes you would look at certain thing, but seeing nothing. When you do it for a while, you renew your brain. All meditations renews the brain quite a bit. What we want is a good cocktail of all kinds of neurotransmitters, from dopamine to norepinephrine. We want all those particular chemicals to work in unison and to work in a way that really works well for them. And the neurotrophic factors really build the brain beautifully. And that is something that happens through relaxation and moving in a way we never moved before. So for example, when I work with my classes, I talk about expanding one's periphery. How do you do it? First of all, what is periphery? Well, I'm looking at Frank right now. He's in my center. So my picture is in my periphery. And when I wave my hands, I don't only pay attention to where I'm looking, but also where I'm not looking. Like, for example, in your case, Dr. Watkins, looking at the windows in your beautiful house, looking at the, seeing the windows, seeing the plants, seeing what's around you. That was from the jungle, where basically, in order to survive, we had to sense movement around us or we'd be eaten, right? Mm-hmm. So right. The point is, the more we sense what's on the side, the better we're off. And what do we lose in glaucoma? Our peripheral vision, first of all, then the central. But the point is, that's very important. When you start to look at details, when I look at you, Dr. Watkins, sorry to be so graphic, but I don't only look at your whole feature. I'm looking at your nose. I'm looking at your eyes. I'm looking at your beautiful head. I'm looking at everything. I'm looking at the wrinkles on the shirt a little bit, you know, beautiful shirt or sweater. Whatever it is, I'm looking from area to area. When I'm looking at a plant behind you, I'm looking at different leaves. And I've done a very strong picture in my book, Vision for Life, because I remember it in such a deep way. My daughter, at the age of 8, it was hard to convince her to go with me to the beach and look at the waves for eye exercises. So, of course, you know, politics doesn't start in D.C., so I told her, hey, do you want to be on my shoulder? She said, yes. Well, then we're going to go to the beach. Okay, so that's the first thing. We took a walk, and then I put her down, and I gave her obstructive lens, which basically we cover one eye, and it was her left eye, which was a strong eye. In her case, my case is the right. And she looked at petals, and I asked her to count them. And within 56 seconds, she counted 200 petals, which was amazing to me. Years later, I asked her, how many petals do you see in 1 minute? She said, oh, 35. I said, no, you saw 200. She says, but I couldn't follow my count. I said, yes. The point is, she started to use a macula. Now, she was born with cataracts, like me, but she had better surgeries, and like my son. That's genetic in our case. So she was born with cataracts. They removed her lens at the age of 2 weeks, okay? Very good doctor, removed her lens at the age of 2 weeks. She did not have an implant because she was an infant. And she then bypassed the problem of not having a lens by looking at details. And that developed her vision. Today, she does so much paperwork. She sees almost 20/20. And in order to see 20/20, she's taking my class right now, by the way. My own daughter returns to my class. That's a big compliment to a father.
That is.
Yeah, so that's a very, very interesting thing that happened to her. She used the contact between the brain and the center, the macula, to start and look at details.
So you're always talking about eyes, but you're interested in more than just eyes. And I understand that you're writing a book, how to, what is it?
Taking back.
How can we build, huh?
Taking back your back.
Oh, you're taking back your back. That's it. Taking back your back. Now, what's that all about?
Oh, we have back pain that we shouldn't have. The only reason that we have them is because of our lifestyle.
Tell me.
And so I think it's so important for us to be aware of our lifestyle. So it's interesting. I met a Muni driver, very nice bus driver, because I took a bus, and I saw him stretching, and I said, I would never want to have your work. He said, why is that? He said, because you have to sit all day.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I agree. And so he stretched. He said, we get a massage once a week. I said, that's tremendously good. But the main thing is you need to balance what's going on with you. Again, I want to remind everybody, we have more than 600 muscles. But what we learn to develop in the gym is all the muscles we already have developed. You make your chest stronger, you make your biceps stronger, things of that nature. It's all beautiful, it looks great, it does good things, but it's not good enough. What we have to learn is to work on the muscles we never used before. Mm-hmm. And that creates new connection between the brain and the muscles. And we become much more active that way, in a way that really affects the body well. So I really hope that once the book gets published, I'll be able to be back on your show and talk more about it. But the main thing is that we could prevent 99% of our back pain, of our back problems, learning to use more of what we have with less effort. So many people, they lift weights. But what about lifting weights where it's hard to lift them? Like not only curls, but sideways. What about lifting your own leg sideways and staying there for a minute? What about moving your toes one by one? What about starting to use your fingers in extension? We no more climb up trees, so people flex their fingers, they don't extend them enough. So learning to use what we never use is the beginning of life for our back. Because the back is so important, as I said before, there's no way you can prevent glaucoma and actually most blinding disease without loosening up your neck. And there's no way you can loosen up your neck without loosening up every other part of the back and going down to the legs and even the toes and the fingers, of course. You got to work on everything and find movements you've never done before, adapt them, use them. Change them. That book will also affect people with spinal problems, with arthritis. And I think it's so important for people to start and work on the back. So I'm telling you about the book right now. and it still is in process of design, but the text is there. A couple of pictures have to be added. And when the book is out, I would love to share it with you.
Oh, yes. We want, you know, I think we were the first to interview you when you produced your latest edition of Vision for Life. We like to be the first also for the back.
Wonderful.
Take it back to your back.
It's in 20 languages. It's a bestseller in several languages right now. And I didn't even go on mainstream media. You know, I'm going to media like yours. I was with Joni Eisenberg, and I was with Marsha. And of course, first of all, with you. And it is published since 2012, and now it's 2026. And I got a nice award for the work I've done in Spain, in Valencia, when I did my last European and Israeli tour, basically.
That's fantastic. Now, a lot of people with back issues, they have arthritis and disc issues and so forth. Can you help those people also?
Absolutely. And we have to really understand that subtle movement, almost micro movement, is extremely helpful. That if we mobilize the lower back, the middle back, the upper back, that's very extremely helpful. And to do gentle movements helps the back much more than doing vigorous movement. That's important. And almost movement that you're not aware of, that you can do with your body.
We're almost out of time, but I just want to, I want to you to expand on this back, working on the back with exercise and consciousness, how that can impact the whole system, including the digestive system and the vision and so forth. Could you break that down a bit?
You know, some of the biggest enemies your back has is, of course, some of it is emotional tension that you carry in your system a lot. But other problems that you have is that the biggest enemy you have is your chair. The fact that you sit on the chair for many hours, you haven't seen apes or monkeys sitting on the same branch for 8 hours, but we do. And that stiffens the back enormously. The back is built to sit for about half an hour, not much more than that. So stretching every 20 minutes and allowing a big release to the back is so useful for the system. And the way we do it is we stand up, we grab the leg, we pull it backwards, we arch the middle back, which most people don't hardly ever do. Arch the middle back and let the neck fall backwards. That makes a huge difference. So it's like, I would like to actually invite audience at home. Stand up, grab a chair if you want to, and get your leg backwards if you can. And if you can, just stretch and then push your chest forwards. You do it in one leg for 20 seconds. You do it in another leg for 20 seconds. And a lot of what happened to you will be that you rested your muscles from continuous tension.
So I sit a lot at work. How often should I be doing that?
20 minutes, every 20 minutes for 20 seconds.
20 minutes for 20 seconds. All right.
But you have no business sitting on your chair after 2 hours. You got to get out of your chair and have a 5 minutes walk.
All right.
Yeah, absolutely. That's number one. Number two, we have to start and mobilize our toes. Do you know that there's some people that can play guitar with their toes? Some people who were born, unfortunately, armless or with short arm can feed themselves with their toes. And we have no access to our toes. There's nothing as harmful to us as shoes and cement. But we have no choice. We have to walk with shoes on cement. Here in Quebec, I have to walk with boots on ice and on snow. But it is so wonderful for me to walk and run on the beach barefoot. And whenever you have that possibility, a good rug, a good carpet, grass, that doesn't have any pollutant in it, like glass or something, wherever you feel safe. That is so good for you to walk bare feet. That's number one. And take your shoes off all you can. And then in my classes, you have to see how paralyzed people feel when I tell them to move their toes one by one. I tell them, hold the rest of the toes, move one toe at a time. It is so tough for them. They don't even know those things move. But then,
unfortunately, we are out of time. I want you to give your contact information and the information about the upcoming seminar.
Again. So, first of all, thank both of you big time. It was too short for me. I wish that they would give Dr. Watkins 3 hours. I could have a real discussion with him for a while. But our phone number is 415-665-9574. You can look at our website, www.self-healing.org or www.self-healing.org. And from the 12th to the 17th of February, I have a 6-day I class. It goes over the weekend, so it's Thursday through Tuesday. And I would love to see some people. I saw some people when I went to New York and had a group of Hasids that I worked with. A couple of people came from listening to your show. Well, I would love to see some people coming to warmer San Francisco. We can help you to find housing and to and so you know that much of our work is going to be on the beach with looking at the waves and looking at charts and every day seeing them better.
All right, Brother Frank.
Thank you so much.
Any closing remarks?
Dr. Amir, thank you for boldly bringing forth such vital information that affects eye vision and your back.
The whole body, the whole body, the mind.
The whole body,
yeah.
Immense thanks to our engineers, Mike Nasella and Kalia Chapman, Mayuki Williams, Acting General Manager, Katia Stitt, Program Director, and all of the other tireless WPFW staff, programmers, volunteers, and our loyal listeners. Thank you, Maka B, for your music contributions. And thank you, Joni Eisenberg, for what you do. Stay tuned to WPFW Jazz and Justice Radio. Next up is African Deep Thought Edition with Brother Kaba. After that, To the East with Ambrose Lane Jr. Listen to next week at 2 p.m. for another life-saving broadcast of To Your Health.
Try and take care of yourself. Health is
hey, it was wonderful to be with you.
Mr. Prevention is better than cure. You can't rely on the system no more. Say all over the West, the health care in a mess, especially for the poor, that's for sure. Eat good, exercise, and try your best. My visit the doctor less and less. In your own health, you have to invest. It's in the best of your interest, cause health is wealth. Vital is vital. Try and take care of yourself. Health is wealth. Vital is vital, you can't rely on nobody else. Health is wealth. Vital is vital, try and take care of yourself. Health is wealth. Vital is vital, you can't rely on nobody else.
Support for To Your Health comes in part from Dr. Theodore Watkins of the Watkins Institute. Dr. Watkins advocates holistic medicine and teaches lifestyle changes. Further information is available at www.twiliving.com.
On Monday, January 19th, 9 a.m. until midnight, WPFW presents Injustice Anywhere, honoring the Pan-Africanist MLK and Haiti, the first sovereign Black Republic. From 9 a.m. until noon, we examine the Pan-Africanist legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. From noon until midnight, we center Haiti, her history, triumphs, troubles, and culture. That's Injustice Anywhere, honoring the Pan-Africanist, MLK, and Haiti, the first sovereign Black Republic, Monday, January 19th, 9 a.m. until midnight. WPFW, Building a Better World, one broadcast at a time.
Good afternoon. For WPFW Washington, I'm Darnia Samuels. Here are some headlines for this hour. The tension between the United States and Venezuela has gone to another level as the U.S. launched an attack over the weekend that killed at least 80 people and resulted in the kidnapping of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro and his wife, First Lady Celia Flores. Maduro and Flores were transported to New York and appeared in court today to face criminal charges of narco-terrorism. In other words, accusations of conspiring with violent, dangerous drug traffickers for the last 25 years. Both Maduro and Celia Flores pleaded not guilty and emphasized to the judge that they are still the president and first lady of Venezuela, respectively. President Trump praised the U.S. forces responsible for kidnapping Maduro and Flores and promised to run Venezuela and take control of the country's oil. Venezuela has the largest reserves of crude oil in the world. Meanwhile, many people are protesting and several countries are expressing their disapproval of the kidnapping. Cuba said their government, quote, strongly condemns the military aggression carried out by the United States against Venezuela, describing the action as, quote, cowardly and constituting a criminal act in violation of international law. In November, the longest government shutdown in United States history, lasting 43 days, came to an end. However, the government will shut down again on January 30th if Congress does not pass full-year spending bills or a short-term extension. In efforts to prevent another shutdown, lawmakers on Capitol Hill have unveiled a new spending bill totaling at least $174 billion that could get a vote in the House of Representatives as early as this week. The spending bill is a package of three of the 12 annual spending bills that Congress is charged with passing, which would fund the Energy, Commerce, Interior, and Justice Departments through September 30th, which is the end of this fiscal year. So far, senior Republicans and Democrats both signaled support for the bill. House Appropriations Committee Chairman Tom Cole said this bipartisan package, quote, invests in priorities crucial to the American people, making our community safer, supporting affordable and reliable energy, and responsibly managing vital sources. Arizona Senator and retired Navy Captain Mark Kelly is now in a battle with the Trump administration as the Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, is accusing him of participating in a, quote, reckless and seditious video intended to undermine good order and military discipline. The video in question includes Senator Kelly and a group of Democratic lawmakers who have military and intelligence backgrounds telling armed forces that they can refuse illegal orders. The officials who made those statements had worked to limit President Trump's ability to deploy National Guard members domestically and launch military action against suspected narco-terrorists without congressional approval. Because of Senator Kelly's comments, Pete Hegseth said he will receive a formal censure letter and his retirement rank will be reviewed. This review could result in a downgrade of his rank and lead to a reduction in retirement pay. Senator Kelly said he will fight this with everything he has to, quote, send a message back that Pete Hegseth and Donald Trump don't get to decide what Americans in this country get to say about their government, end quote. In the D.C. area, this month, Mayor Muriel Bowser, in collaboration with Sing for Hope and the Union Station Redevelopment Corporation, is presenting the January Jazz Jam at Union Station. This jam will feature a free live instrumental jazz concert series featuring local musicians every Tuesday and Wednesday of January from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. at the stage at Union Station on the mezzanine level of the retail concourse. Mayor Bowser is promoting it as a way for travelers to enjoy music before journeying to their next destination. This week's performers are the Wesley Biles Trio and Herb Scott Trio. For more information, you can visit unionstationdc.com. Again, that's unionstationdc.com. In today's weather, it's currently about 41 degrees in D.C. That's all for your headline news this hour. For WPFW Washington, I'm Darnia Samuels. Please be safe and thank you for listening.